Welcome to Inclusion Matters, produced by the Center for Inclusive Childcare,
aka the CICC.
We're located at inclusivechildcare.org.
Welcome to Inclusion Matters, a podcast of the Center for Inclusive Child Care. I'm Cindy Croft, director of the center, and I'm here today with Priscilla Weigel and Dia Anderson, who also are who also work for the center and are fellow podcasters. Hi, ladies.
Hello.
Hello.
And so today we thought we'd talk about kind of the idea of he likes to play alone. Mm-hmm. And why don't you tell us a little bit more what we're getting at with that title, Priscilla?
Okay, that seems to be a comment that we hear a lot when we're out in different childcare settings, just a provider sharing a description of a child that's in their care that maybe chooses to do solitary play for well beyond those years of healthy development. And when you look at, you know, early play skills, solitary play is a way to kind of begin to build before you go to parallel and then the other levels of play. But there are many kids that just really like to play alone. And what we've seen in some cases, those children that choose that over and over again may have some other red flags for autism spectrum disorders and that type of thing. And so we thought we'd use a two-part podcast to just go over some things, some reasons for why a child would choose to play alone, kind of understanding that that's a comfortable choice for a lot of kids. And then the part two would be, how do we look at some strategies that we can infuse into their day that would help support their play and also help them to build some confidence in their play skills?
So while we'll talk about play skills for kids who may be on the autism spectrum, really what we're talking about is practical information for encouraging all kids who may have some play struggles, or really just kids in general that need who need to keep developing play skills.
Right. Right.
Okay.
And I think for most children that are struggling with playing with their peers is that oftentimes they'll stay in that solitary play mode because it feels safer. Mm-hmm. It's not very challenging. It's just too hard, too anxiety provoking, or they're just not interested mm-hmm. in moving out of their own play arena mm-hmm. entering into the play of another peer.
Right, who may have other ideas of what the play should look like and how it should
exactly.
go. And for some kids, that's hard.
Right, yeah. it takes those ability to negotiate and cooperate, and mm-hmm. those are tough challenges sometimes.
Sometimes in a classroom, if a child's playing by themselves, but they're playing quietly or they're very engaged, then it's easy to just let them continue to play
sure.
Rather than try to sort of stir the pot and
right.
and start to introduce other children into that play or bring that child into somebody else's play.
Right. A perfect example of sometimes what a child's doing is not necessarily positive for them, but it doesn't cause any waves in the water of the classroom,
right.
and therefore sometimes it's easier to just let that go on, mm-hmm. but we really have to be proactive in helping them to move out of that wanting to just play alone into being able to interact with their peers.
Well, mm-hmm. let's talk a minute about why it's important to move out of solitary play when you reach a certain developmental age.
Okay. For the children that I think I'm thinking of that would be the play alone crowd of kids and that you might know out there, those of you who are listening, would be the child that really is kind of stuck in a rut with play. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of what Dia was talking about too, helping them move to the next level of play. So it would be the child that maybe spends a lot of time just lining up the cars, and if someone comes over and says, I want that red car, then that child would just completely crumble or get really angry or whatever. So the idea of moving them to the next level would be to help them with those social skills. And we know that learning is really important and play is how children learn. So if you never move past that entry level of play, you're missing out on a lot of skills and a lot of tools. And for children on the autism spectrum, they tend to like to play. It's easier to play with objects and toys than people mm-hmm. because we know how unpredictable people are, especially if you're in a classroom or a childcare setting where you have children ranging from the ages of 2 to 5. think about all those different skill levels that you have to contend with. And if you're someone that likes repetition and likes predictability and likes to be in charge of the play, you're going to constantly be coming against people that don't agree with those ideas. And so they're going to push your limits, as we were talking about mm-hmm. earlier. Kind of the waves of the water will start to really get strong and overwhelming sometimes.
And I would think that while we're going to talk about strategies in the second podcast, using those elements you just talked about, the predictability and the routine would be important to weaving into the play that you're going to introduce the other children into as play partners, or that child into a different play surrounding. But we're going to talk about that in part two.
Right, but that's really a good point, is not to just push them. I mean, if you use the analogy of that mama bird in the nest, and just we don't want to shove them out of the nest so they fall and continually fail. We want to set them up for success. So the basic beginnings would be helping them see that play looks interesting mm-hmm. with other kids mm-hmm. and drawing from their attention and what they like to what some of the other kids are doing, and then that in turn will spur their interest to maybe stay with it
right.
and that type of thing.
It sometimes might even be as little as just making sure that they're in closer proximity to their peers than usual.
Right.
Just so that they even begin to notice. Because some children can get so wrapped up in their solo play mm-hmm. that they don't even notice what's going on around them. So mm-hmm. we need to create opportunities for them to be near maybe their peers. We set something up so it's something of that child's interest
mm-hmm.
That's going to draw them to even just observing and watching. Because that's really initially how that all starts, is just by playing near other children and listening to what they're saying, kind of watching out of the corner of their eye what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. So a question listeners might be thinking is, you know, one of the positive practices around play is to let children explore and then help their engagement be extended, so they stay with a mm-hmm. in a creative cycle in whatever the play situation is. So we want children to be persistent in a play activity, but then we have children sometimes on the autism spectrum who that sustained play can become, I mean, when is it problematic?
Mm-hmm.
When and how then do we know how to curb that play period so it doesn't become
like perseverative
2 hours or yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that we sort of lose that part that's the creative mm-hmm. and obviously the interaction part can be missing as
mm-hmm.
well. And I think some people might be thinking, well, what do I do with that when I've got a child who's very engaged, but now it's going on and I don't know when to intervene and then try to move it to the next place.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that perseveration, you wouldn't think that would be a bad, you'd think, what? I wanted them to play. Why is this a bad thing? But then that's that whole piece of watching other people's cues, following the routine and directive. So you're saying, nope, we're supposed to be cleaning up now, and this child's stuck in that place so deeply that maybe the peer that he was playing with is ready to clean up, but that child isn't.
Well, and I think, too, if the play is not expanding their learning or mm-hmm. their vocabulary, their social skills, their emotional understanding of themselves and their peers, you know, it's not really creative play anymore.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's just kind of this rote, this is what I do. When you're not seeing any differences and not any growth, I guess, is what I'm
mm-hmm.
trying to say.
Right. And so, if you find yourself being worried about if someone were to walk over by that child when they were involved in their play, and the challenging behaviors start to spur where the child really gets upset when anyone comes near, or if someone were to move something, or maybe the toy that child really likes to play with every day, you needed to give it back to the other person that you borrowed it from. Maybe you borrowed it from another family child care provider and they need that train set back, but you know that this child's really attached to it, and so you're just waiting for the explosion or the frustration to show itself, and you don't know how to handle that.
Right, so that, again, we can talk more in the next one, but that would be a good time to have some sort of planned transitions in place for when we know, as you said, Dia, that they're not really learning anymore, that it's become just a rote sort of, the play is robotic, or maybe that's not even the right word, but it's not the play isn't necessarily benefiting the learning or the development, and then we want to come in and say, what's our planned transition from moving them now to another kind of play, knowing that there could be challenge in that move. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think people struggle a lot, is knowing, because
right.
everything's going okay, status quo.
Right, leave it that way.
Right, yeah. Don't rock the boat.
Yeah, don't rock the boat. Or then we go to the other extreme of rock the boat, really, just tip the boat over. And just say, oh, we're done with this. And that happens more than we like to see, because then you have just frustration for everyone, and upset. It's an upsetting kind of explosive situation where you just say, well, they're stuck playing with this toy every single day, and I want them to play. I want them to show interest, as you said, and to start listening right. to their peers. So I'm just going to take all the dinosaurs away for a while, because that's where they always get stuck. And that's not the answer for that child either.
So I guess what it's boiling down to, what I'm hearing, is that it involves almost making a play plan.
Yeah,
completely. Yep.
Where you plan on how you're going to help this child to expand their play so that they're benefiting more, whether it be social skills or just interests in other things, is that you really need to think it out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we'll definitely talk about that in the next podcast, where we'll help kind of break things down into some steps on ways to set children up for success and broaden these important skills. You know, we want to see increased language, we want to see decrease in challenging behaviors, and we want those repetitive behaviors and that perseveration to decrease, and we want kids to be interested in branching out in their play.
Excellent.
And seeking out.
Yep, and increasing that social competence.
Right.
That's so important for all kids, but particularly kids who may be, again, on the autism spectrum and may have more difficulty with friendship skills. And we would encourage people who are listening who want more information to go to our website and go to our Learning Center and open up the info module that's called Encouraging Play Skills in Children with Autism. It's mm-hmm. a lot of really great, useful information. And then we are starting a new feature on our podcast that will be included in the descriptions on the website and in our e-update. And why don't you say a little bit about that, Priscilla, before we close?
Okay, we're going to include a discussion question that relates to the topic of the podcast. We've heard from many of you that you use these for maybe staff meetings or group conversations, and so it's just a way to kind of spur your thinking on to give you a place to take the information that you've listened to on the podcast and take it to that next level of discussion and really help cement some of that new learning and reflect on what you've heard.
Yeah, so we hope it'll be helpful. Let us know. Fill out the feedback form when you listen to the podcast and tell us what you think about those discussion questions. So
yeah.
We will wrap this one up. Thank you, ladies. And we will go on to do our next podcast on some strategies. So we hope people will be able to listen to both part one and part two.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's all for now. See you next time.